This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run with Xiaoning and Chuang. In about half an hour, we'll be speaking to Wan Anwar Wan Ibrahim, former Special Functions Officers at the Speaker's Office at Dewan Rakyat, on parliamentary reforms. But in the meantime, let's talk about the South China Sea, because we do know there has been a bit of a skirmishes there, I think that's the right word. And Malaysia finds itself caught in trade tensions between the US and China by virtue of it being a claimant of the disputed South China Sea, actually one of the world's busiest waterways. Now, recently, US Secretary Mike Pompeo asserted that the US rejects Chinese claims in these waters, calling it China's campaign of bullying.
And of course, earlier this month as well, the Chinese Defense Ministry lambasted America for provocative acts after it sent two aircraft carriers into the South China Sea. And South China Sea, by the way, is it's a waterway which is heavily populated, lots of trade routes there, I think to the tune of $3.4 trillion. So there's a lot at stake. Plus, those Chinese ships have been seen very near Petronas's drilling rights, something which Malaysia has economic claims over.
Yeah, so earlier this month, China's Defense Ministry lambasted the US for provocative acts after it sent two aircraft carriers groups into the South China Sea. So what is Malaysia's approach to this? Because we know that the Auditor General's report stated that China's military encroached into Sabah and Sarawak waters 89 times from 2016 to 2019. That's quite a lot. So for a better understanding of this, we speak to Ridzwan Rahmat, Principal Defence Analyst, JANES by IHS Markets. Now, the Foreign Minister, Dato' Sri Hishamuddin Hussein, has reiterated Malaysia's call for a peaceful resolution to tensions in the South China Sea, and at the same time said that Malaysia won't give up its sovereignty. With this, how would you gauge the Perikatan National Government's approach so far to issues like this?
Yes, hi, good morning, guys. Yeah, now that you've asked that question, I had the privilege of interviewing Dato' Sri Hishamuddin back then when he was still a defense minister. And I asked him the question, you know, why is Malaysia relatively less vocal than the other claimants in the South China Sea? And his answer was quite startling, because he said that, you know, Rizwan, if we don't seem to be doing anything, that doesn't mean that we are doing not doing anything. Yeah, because what he's trying to say is that Malaysia may seem less vocal on the surface, but Dato' Sri emphasizes that he is extremely active on the layer of informal diplomacy. So according to him, in the background, while he was still the defense minister, there was a lot of informal negotiations going on with Beijing. And now that he is the foreign affairs minister, I would imagine the same kind of protocols being done. And the reason is this: China is still Malaysia's largest export destination. Malaysia cannot afford to be as vocal as the Vietnam, as vocal as the Philippines, because it might hurt a relationship at another level, at another layer, which is trade, which will have a lot more severe implications for the country.
So Rizwan, what is actually happening behind the scenes? Do you know what our foreign minister is actually doing? I mean, or have any indications
as
of that?
As I understand it, Malaysia is still refraining from sending over naval vessels. So in maritime, in naval speak, there's something called White House and Grey House. So the Grey House are the naval ships, while the White House are vessels from agencies such as the MMEA, the Malaysia Maritime Enforcement Authority. The Grey House vessels are seen as a little bit more politically sensitive because they are heavily armed. They are armed with missiles and things that can escalate tensions. Meanwhile, the White House vessels are a bit more law enforcement in nature. And that's what Malaysia has been sending to places like the Luconia Shoals, which is known in Malaysia as Batu Petinggi Ali, I understand it. So the incursions that you mentioned just now, 89 times between 2016 and 2019, I personally, as an observer of the South China Sea, I suspect there is a lot more. And what has been done by Malaysia is that they've been stationing MMEA vessels to shadow China Coast Guard vessels, to shadow Chinese fishing militia vessels. So this shadowing are done on a passive manner. That means, you know, they don't provoke the Chinese into leaving, But at the same time, the Malaysia maintains its sovereignty over the waters by having a presence of a White House vessel at all times.
Yeah, Rizwan, what do you make of former Foreign Minister Anifa Aman's comments that Dato' Sri Hishamuddin is either in denial or ignorant of the fact that those incursions have happened? And he also accuses Dato' Sri Hisham of playing politics with Malaysia's maritime and strategic interests. What did he mean by that?
Yeah, I saw the comments by Dato' Sri, and I found it quite strange because you know, anyone who has been monitoring the South China Sea will know that the statement is not true. Indeed, China has been making multiple repeated incursions into waters of Malaysia for a while now. But that again, it ties in with my first point that I made just now. I was wondering if Dato' Sri was, you know, trying to downplay things on the surface while pursuing something on the informal channels. I think as Foreign Affairs Minister, his priorities are a little bit more different than when he was a Defence Minister. I think the economy is not doing very well, and I think Dato' Sri does not want to harm trade relations between the two countries, because as we know, China has a habit of linking two tracks together. You know, when someone is when they are offended on the defense or the foreign affairs track, they may retaliate on the trade track. So I think that's what Malaysia is trying to avoid at the moment. However, I don't think it's a reason to downplay things like what he did.
Meanwhile, Hishamuddin also cited the code of conduct that ASEAN was working towards together with China, and this would be the binding successor of the Declaration of Conduct, which was signed in 2002. Do you actually see this code of conduct being signed? And if so, what would it take for it to be effective?
Yeah, I'm a little bit skeptical about the code of conduct. As we know, you know, it's been ongoing for two decades now, almost 20 years, and progress has been extremely slow. And the reason is because the underlying factors to the South China Sea disputes are still there. It will not be addressed by the Code of Conduct. The COC only addresses things like what should you do when you encounter a foreign vessel, but it does not address the fundamental of issues behind the dispute, and that is China's assertion that those are its territorial waters. So, you know, while the Code of Conduct will be effective in preventing escalation, on the diplomatic front, I don't think it's going to solve anything because the issues are still there.
So do you think this lack of cohesive and assertive ASEAN response has actually led to a more emboldened approach by the Chinese? And what might actually dissuade them from further incursions?
So the thing is, as I have always mentioned in a lot of interviews, ASEAN is a house divided. Okay, we've got 10 member countries, but about half of them are not taking sides in the South China Sea disputes. And some of them are even supporting Beijing's stance in the South China Sea. So as long as it's a house divided, it will never achieve the objectives or the aims that it's trying to achieve by claimant countries. And China knows this. And that's the reason why China has always insisted that any negotiations on the South China Sea be done on a bilateral basis instead of a multilateral basis. And as long as China can keep ASEAN as a house divided, I think it knows that it can have its way in the South China Sea.
So, Rizwan, how does Malaysia prepare for itself for a worst-case scenario, an eventuality that might result in some kind of military conflict between the Americans and the Chinese? How does Malaysia protect itself from that?
I think Malaysia is trying to avoid going down that route in the first place. You know, last time, I think a few weeks ago, when the West Capella was being shadowed by a Chinese ship, and then the Americans sent in a littoral combat ship to accompany the West Capella, I think Dato' Sri made a very interesting statement, and he admonished both sides. You know, instead of supporting the Americans, he admonished both the U.S. and the Chinese ships for making the South China Sea a very high-tension area. So I think what Malaysia is trying to do is to keep its part of the exclusive economic zone free from naval activities as much as possible. Because Malaysia, the Royal Malaysian Navy itself, has not been very active in sending the Malaysian Navy ships. So it expects other countries' extraterritorial powers to not send their government ships as well, I think.
Thank you, Ridzwan. That was Ridzwan Rahmat of Jane's by IHS Markets. I think this, you know, this incursions will continue, and he brought up a very valid point, you know, because ASEAN is not cohesive. It somewhat emboldens China to increase its incursions in this region.
Yeah, I find it only mildly ironic that China is practicing the same tactic that Malaysia practices, which is divide and conquer. ASEAN being a house divided is the same kind of thing that you can say about Malaysia, but about Malaysia being a house divided. And it's easier to control people when you are a house divided. But I think Malaysia will continue to play its role in being as impartial as possible, superficially at least, because you can't be taking sides. We have to play Switzerland for as long as we can until the time comes at the 11th hour that we've got to pick a side. And I think at this point in time, it's quite clear which side we're going to pick.
Well, up next, we'll be speaking to Simon Baptist, Global Chief Economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit, on impact of Huawei ban on UK-China relations. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.